Wondery Plus subscribers can binge all 6 episodes of Guru ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
It was March 2009, and in a big chain hotel in New Jersey, a crowd milled around, waiting. Once the doors opened, everyone headed for the same place.
It was a large auditorium with a big stage in front.
The event was called the Harmonic Wealth Weekend, a rigorous 2-day seminar that promised to get participants on the fast track to personal and professional success. It wasn't the kind of thing Ginny Brown was normally into, but her daughter, Kirby, had insisted that they go together. As they walked in, she had to admit, the atmosphere was exciting.
And we had to walk through a gauntlet, I will say, of cheerleaders who were jumping up and down and revving up the energy in the room. And I remember saying to one woman, I said, man, you girls really had your coffee this morning. And she said to me, oh, we don't drink coffee. Like, that's poison. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I do, and I love it.
As everyone took their seats, the lights dimmed. James Arthur Ray stepped onto the stage and began a version of a speech he often gave.
Let's talk about what's changing right now in your world. You see, I firmly believe that you live in the most exciting time in our world history. It's a time where science and spirituality are realizing that they're sister studies.
James was tanned with a bright white smile, wearing a bright white shirt.
Pretty trim, athletic build, fairly good looking.
Just can't get going in the morning without my coffee. Give me a frickin' break!
Total command of the audience.
People laughed. They nodded their heads like, yeah.
You know, that high energy kind of environment is just kind of fun. You want to be part of it. You want to belong. You don't want to stand out and be kind of against what's going on.
Because James Ray was a star.
Law of attraction says like attracts. Like. And as you lock your attention upon that, then another particle which is in harmony with it is attracted, and another's attracted, and another's attracted, and bang, you've got a Mercedes.
On stage, he talked about reflecting on yourself and your position in life. Then he began to pull audience members onto the stage and ask them questions.
And I'd like to ask for 2 volunteers to help me out here. I need a couple of volunteers, okay? Come on, both of you, come on up. Give them a hand. Give them a hand as they come up.
At first, Ginny was impressed.
I was fascinated by his ability to really read someone. You know, he read people really well.
But as she watched, something began to nag at her.
There were a couple of times where he brought people up on the stage and had them reveal very deep, personal, troubling things in their life.
Ginny is a clinical social worker.
And I sat there thinking, you know, as a trained therapist, those are the kinds of questions that I would ask if someone were sitting in my office.
Not in front of hundreds of people.
I was both fascinated and uncomfortable.
She turned to her daughter, Kirby, who was mesmerized.
Just said, that's really not such a great thing to do.
But Kirby was focused on James. Kirby was in her late 30s and had bounced around careers and relationships. She wanted more success and stability in her life. Ginny knew that Kirby had been doing her own soul searching and that James's teachings had already helped.
And she was going to stay there to get the most out of the experience, whether she believed everything or not. But neither of us ever thought he was dangerous.
Later that year, after attending another James Ray event with her father, Kirby Brown would get in her car and drive to Sedona, Arizona, for a 5-day intensive retreat with James called Spiritual Warrior. For James's followers, it was the pinnacle event of their journey, and Kirby spent her life savings, nearly $10,000, to be there. The retreat started on October 4th, 2009. 5 days later, Ginny was at home in upstate New York. Around 8 a.m., the doorbell rang.
At 8:15, the trooper comes to the door and asks me if I know Kirby Brown. You know, my first thought was, oh my God, is she in some kind of trouble?
But it was more than trouble. Ginny would never see her daughter again. From Wondery, I'm Matt Stroud, and this is Guru. The first time I met James Arthur Ray, I was at one of his events. I was in Phoenix working on a story about him. I was fascinated by how James had managed to evolve from a small-time corporate motivational speaker to a self-help celebrity who filled ballrooms with people who'd paid thousands of dollars to be there. The event I attended was in suburban Phoenix. And just like Ginny Brown and her daughter, Kirby, I was impressed by how polished and confident James seemed on stage. About midway through the event, he came over to me. He was shorter than I expected, but muscular. He shook my hand firmly.
So, Mr. Matt, how are you enjoying the day so far?
I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Yeah? Well,
I actually am.
Well, good. I'm glad.
He had a big smile. When he spoke, he looked me straight in the eye. And he was charming.
Well, I appreciate being here. I really do.
We all want to see our lives get better. We all struggle with our relationships, our careers, our finances. And when things go wrong, we look for help, for answers. This is a six-part series about the search for those answers and where it led the seekers. This is episode one, Spiritual Warriors. The search for answers is what led Laura Tucker to James Arthur Ray. For a long time, Laura had been unhappy. She ran her own business working with car dealerships in Canada, and she'd always prided herself on being a high performer, professional, collected, competent.
On the personal side, though, things weren't as bright and shiny as business had been. I was struggling with what I guess you could call undiagnosed depression.
Laura had moved across the country for work, and she didn't have any family or friends in her new city. She wasn't happy with her love life either.
I still had some designs on having my own family. I was dating like one bad guy after another.
Whatever she was doing, it wasn't working.
Doing the same thing over and over again with the same frustrating, insulting result just wasn't leading me to have the type of life that I saw for myself.
It was around this time that she heard about James Ray. He'd made his name in the film sensation The Secret. His charisma and charm leapt off the screen. He promised viewers that he could help them find happiness, money, and love.
You will learn more about yourself than you could ever imagine. We get into your beliefs and the things that have limited you and where they've come from and how to release those and break through your barriers.
Brandy Amstell, then in her mid-30s, heard James's pitch too.
So the promise was get rid of the black bags that are holding you back in your life. The things that are buried so deep that you don't even know they exist.
Brandy is something of a free spirit. She has colored streaks in her long blonde hair, and she loves to express herself through art. She's been a painter and a sculptor, and in 2008, she'd been trying to launch herself as a filmmaker. But, like Laura, she felt as though her life just wasn't going the way she wanted. And James sounded like someone who could help her.
You see, I am so totally committed to not just giving you an event, but to giving you a transforming life experience. And that's what you deserve.
Listening to these words at this point in my life, what new insights will happen?
You'll begin to feel like a load is lifted off your shoulder. I guarantee you. You talk to some of the people in the room who have been there.
And it was extremely swayed to get you to want to be 100% in.
At the time, James was traveling the country, holding events like the one Ginny and Kirby Brown went to. But there were also chances to go deeper, to spend more time with him. Those events were a ladder, from harmonic wealth, to quantum leap, to creating absolute wealth, to modern magic, and to practical mysticism. At the top of the ladder was Spiritual Warrior. As Brandy climbed the ladder, she heard those who had already been there rave about it.
It's by far the best of all the programs. It's like mind-blowing.
The pamphlet for the event was short on specifics. On one side were photos of Sedona's striking desert landscape. On the other, a list of things to pack.
8 little swatches of fabric, 1 inch by 1 inch. And then you had to bring, like, lip balm and, you know, those kinds of things, like personal care items and a swimsuit or shorts, trunks.
But other than that, no one would really tell her much about the event itself, except that she had to go.
There's this secrecy of nobody wanted to spoil the event. I didn't really know what was going on. And so there was a little bit of anxiety about, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen there?
In October 2009, Brandy flew into Phoenix, met up with some friends, then drove north to Sedona. They passed huge red rock formations on the horizon, majestic buttes, crimson canyons that seemed to stretch into oblivion.
It's like this magical place that's, oh, it's going to be so amazing. It was like so divine.
After about 2 hours, they turned off the main highway.
And then we drive up on this dirt road, and it's dirt flying everywhere. And I'm like, ugh, okay, this is not what I anticipated.
Previous James Ray events she'd attended had felt fancy. Resorts, destination tourism, 5-star hotels. These were places that suited the successful person she wanted to be. She had paid over $50,000 for that lifestyle and $10,000 just for Spiritual Warrior. But instead of a resort, here was a cluster of log cabins when she arrived. Brandy was shown to her teepee, a meager tent covered in green canvas that would serve as her home for the event. Nearby, Laura Tucker was settling into her teepee.
It's rustic, beautiful, but rustic. And it was very much like going to camp, to grown-up camp.
Laura figured it would be like the other James Ray events that she'd attended. Fun, high energy, affirming.
And it was very, very different, right from the get-go.
That first day, James called everyone into a large cabin that would serve as their main meeting place for the week. He was wearing a business casual outfit, a white button-down shirt tucked in with the sleeves rolled up, khakis, brown loafers. There were long tables with enough room for about 60 people to eat and chat. Laura thought they were there to hang out, to get to know each other, get ready for the next day.
The next thing I know, somebody is pulling out a shaver and saying, okay, it's time to shave your heads.
A woman stood holding a set of hair clippers. Everyone turned toward her. The room was quiet for a few moments. Then, another woman with thick, long black hair stood up from one of the long tables behind Laura. She bounded over to the chair and sat down. Strips of black locks fell to the floor, one after another. When the woman stood up again and faced the room, she was totally bald. Everyone cheered and clapped. The woman beamed as she fast walked past Laura back to her table.
That immediately threw me off balance, and not in a way that I appreciated.
Laura began moving farther and farther to the side of the cabin, trying to stay out of sight. One by one, attendees volunteered to sit in the chair to shave their heads.
One of the men who I hadn't met before saw me hanging to the side and took the shaver, or one of the shavers, and came walking up to me and said, okay, it's time.
Everyone, including James, was cheering her on.
I wasn't having anything to do with it at that point.
This wasn't what Laura had expected. She got out of there fast. James had told them to bring a journal, to write down their thoughts and feelings over the week. So she pulled it out of her bag.
You know, from the first most superficial level of, if you don't want to shave your head, you're hung up on your appearance. I was having a struggle with feeling like I wasn't playing full on.
Play full on. This was a key slogan of James Ray's teachings.
You know, on one hand, I didn't want to shave my head. And on the other hand, I wasn't playing full on. And that set up a huge conflict.
She kept writing.
I was writing in my journals about why is it that I was so hard on myself.
And writing.
I was so unforgiving of myself. I let people walk all over me in my personal life. This whole pattern of hiding and concealing myself, it was kind of convoluted, but it was around appearance.
James's teachings were based around making breakthroughs, achieving moments of epiphany about one's life, where it was headed, and what was blocking success, whatever that might mean. This event was about digging deep into your black bags, a metaphor for old wounds and invisible barriers to progress and happiness.
I was going into my inner world, exploring all of these black bags.
But she kept hitting roadblocks. She felt like the answers were beyond her.
Like, I just wasn't getting there. And I finally said to him, obviously, I don't see it. If you're so smart, why don't you tell me? And he just looked at me. He says, you think you're unlovable. Why don't you go and write about that?
This time, as Laura wrote and reflected, something began to shift.
You know, why would I date unsuitable men? Because I didn't think I deserved more. Why would I stay in a business that I had long fallen out of love with? Well, because I didn't think I deserved more. It was like everything became clear.
She knew she wanted to try new things, to take risks. It would be worth it if she could be happier, more successful.
It finally got to the point where all the dots connected for me, and it became clear that I was hiding behind my appearance. The clippers were really loud when they turned them on, and I closed my eyes waiting to feel it touch my head. And just before that happened, I opened up my eyes and I saw that somebody was poised with a camera to take pictures of me having my head shaved. And I absolutely lost it and said, there is no pictures of this. This is not for you. The shaver went over my head and it was vibrating and strong. The next thing I saw when I did dare to open my eyes was my hair on the ground around me and a whole bunch of people just looking at me with their eyes wide open and, you know, with smiles on their faces. I remember just feeling a sense of relief that it was over. It must have been adrenaline.
This was it, a breakthrough. This was what Laura had been looking for when she signed up.
And to me, that's the whole point of doing this type of inner work. It's not the glamour or the fame or the fun or the stages, or certainly it's you meet cool people. But at the end of the day, if you're looking to go on this kind of journey like I was, I wanted to get to the heart of the matter because I wanted to feel better.
But she didn't get to savor that breakthrough for long. The surprises of the spiritual warrior retreat were just beginning. James told Laura and the others to come to the main cabin. Once they were all assembled, James entered.
And he's dressed in a long, white, flowing robe that's tied at the waist.
He walked to the center of the room, raised a megaphone to his mouth, and said,
I am God.
You're listening to Guru, a podcast produced by Wondery. For the best in high-quality, thought-provoking content, check out Wondery's catalog of over 50 number one Apple podcast hits and thousands of hours of immersive storytelling. There's something for everyone on Wondery. And to get even more out of Wondery, join Wondery Plus, where you can enjoy over 40,000 ad-free episodes of your favorite binge-worthy podcasts, as well as gain access to amazing live streams and more. Join Wondery Plus today in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit To get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After James Ray introduced himself as God, he divided the room into two groups. He told them they were about to play something called the Samurai Game. The game was common at corporate retreats as a team-building exercise. Normally, groups would be divided up and given challenges, but James put his own spin on it. To start with, no one was allowed to speak. In silence, James made them all perform small, competitive tasks, like balancing an egg on a spoon and racing from one spot to another. James was God, and no one was allowed to talk to God because doing so had consequences. But at one point, Laura Tucker went up to him.
And I asked James a bunch of questions at a time where nobody was supposed to be asking him any questions. He looked at me as I was standing there earnestly asking him a million questions because that's what I would do. And then he just shook his head and went, "Die." And I looked at him and I was like, "Fuck."
Laura dropped to the floor. The rules said that if God killed you, you had to lay on the floor for the rest of the game. And it wasn't a short game.
I could hear people moving around, stepping over me. Some were kind of giggling. Some were like, "Oh, you know, poor Laura."
Minutes passed, then hours.
And I don't think I had quite worked out at that point that being out of the game meant that I was going to miss dinner. So I was lying on the ground and hearing people leaving the room to go to the dining hall.
Brandy Amstel, the filmmaker, was there too.
So it was a very strange dynamic where you might have wanted to say something, but then you didn't because you saw the repercussion of it.
Brandy watched Laura and others drop to the floor. She followed the rules and remained silent. At first, she thought she was doing well, winning. But after a while, she started to wonder when the game would end.
I saw people freezing on the floor, like so cold, not doing well. And we were all in silence, so we couldn't say, "Well, hey, what about the people that are dead?"
The game dragged into the night. It became harder for people to stay quiet. James stood up on a podium to get a better view of the handful of people who remained standing.
He told us that we were so worried about dying that we forgot to live. But we all had to kill ourselves.
James instructed them to pull out imaginary swords from their belts. Then he told them to mime slicing their own throats.
We couldn't talk about it. We couldn't work it out. We couldn't ask questions. We could nothing. Though we didn't die by God's hands per se, but we did end up having to commit hara-kiri.
The game was over. It had been about 5 hours. When Laura rose, she was as stiff as a board. She stretched her sore muscles and looked around, confused.
I had no idea where my stuff was. I didn't know where my bag was. I didn't know where my water was. So I do remember running around in quite a panic.
Next, James led them all into the desert.
So we all go out and we get dropped off at these different locations throughout the desert. It's nighttime. Like, so dark. It's midnight, after midnight. And we're walking through pastures on these little rock trails.
Brandy sat. So did Laura.
I don't think there were, like, assigned spots for people, but we were told, okay, you stay here, you stay here, you stay here. And the idea is that we were to spend the night on our own.
I wasn't totally alone, but I couldn't have a conversation. I could have heard them scream if they screamed, right? Like, they were close enough for that.
We were to draw a circle around our space.
We're supposed to collect rocks, put them in a circle, close the gate, like it's a whole ritual.
And that was to be our, I guess, sacred space or our physical space that we were to inhabit for that overnight.
James called this their vision quest. They would meditate and journal by themselves in the scorching sun of the day and in the cold, dry night. To really focus their minds, there would be no distractions, not even food or water. Laura still remembers how she felt.
I was nervous, but I was also really excited to be able to do this because this is not probably something that I would do on my own.
So all the way leading up to this event, I was like, oh my God, I am not getting anything. I don't know what these black bags are. I haven't found any black bags. I'm just here doing stupid stuff. And like, when am I going to get it?
I do remember during the night, there was some animal that did come. And there were the sound of this, there were hooves on the ground. And there was some kind of a tussle. And I have no sense of how close it was. But I was terrified and making myself very small in my sleeping bag and just like praying that whatever it was would be satisfying enough to whatever was taking it out.
I actually found the exercise to be extraordinary. Like, I loved it. Finally, I get to be in nature by myself and actually have a conversation that could make a difference for myself. And finally, it was between me, the ants, and like the coyotes. I could hear coyotes and like the stars and the moon.
I loved it. It was just a simple night out under the stars.
And I felt such relief and joy. I finally felt peace.
When the vision quest ended, they had been out in the desert, going through their black bags, for 36 hours straight. It was early in the morning as they made their way back to the dining room. Brandy was tired and extremely thirsty, but she was barely going to have a break before the most intense part of the retreat yet. By now, everyone was starving. Some of the attendees hadn't eaten, drank, or slept since before the samurai game on Tuesday. Now, after the 36-hour vision quest, it was Thursday morning, and Brandy was so thirsty.
At breakfast, I need something with moisture, hydration. Some people didn't even do that. They were kind of feeling nauseous from their, like, adventure out in the desert. And so they didn't eat. And they didn't drink water.
Everyone had to head over to the main cabin. Brandy grabbed a water bottle on her way out. Once she arrived, she settled into her seat and slowly scanned the room.
Not all the team was there. There were people gone. Not everybody was there after the vision quest.
Two participants had decided to pack up their stuff and leave right after the samurai game. But no one from James's staff said anything about it.
Wonder where those girls are. Did they get eaten by the mountain lion? Like, really, where are they? Well, what happened?
That's when James Ray walked in. He congratulated everyone for making it this far in Spiritual Warrior. Hearing from him gave Brandy some relief.
He finally breaks the silence, and we can start to debrief and talk about it.
Laura Tucker asked if anyone else had heard animals during the vision quest.
It was probably the first time that I had seen James since he killed me. We like literally just looked at each other and, you know, had a laugh.
Brandy wasn't ready to share, but she eagerly listened to everyone's aha moments. One particular person stood out to her, Kirby Brown. She was the woman who had attended the Harmonic Wealth Seminar with her mom, Ginny. Since then, she'd gone to more events. Spiritual Warrior was her third.
So I sang the song, Rain, Rain, Go Away, Come Again Another Day. And there was the rainbow. That was great.
Kirby had an artistic bent and loved to travel. She was boisterous and fun, always the life of the party.
When we started the game, I was like you. I was like, I'm going to be the hero, you know. And then I died so quickly, you know, just right there. And before it even began, I froze to death. And then I overheated to death, and I puked, and I swallowed it down underneath that pillow in there.
Wow.
And, or underneath the blanket. I realized that being so disciplined, you know, that was incredible.
I just was like, wow. So imagine going from that place, having been dead for hours and hours, and then straight out into the wilderness. She didn't get dinner. Now, so here she is finally getting to break her silence and say some stuff. And it was really moving.
James sat on an elevated chair and announced, "We're not going to have lunch."
At that point, he tells us, "Oh, you better go drink some water, because you're about to go in a sweat lodge, and it's better if you're hydrated." We're like, what?
James had been overseeing exercises that he called sweat lodges since at least 2003. His employees and people who'd been following him for years knew that these were harsh, challenging events. But in his speech, James called them sacred.
So you're going to have an opportunity this afternoon to once again partake in a tradition, a sacred ceremony, and a practice that is as old as time itself, a death and rebirth experience. It's an experience that I promise you might very well be one of the most difficult things you've ever done with me, if not in your entire life. If you choose to play full on, which I'm going to challenge you to do, it will be the most intense experience, the most intense heat that you have ever experienced in your entire life. I guarantee that. You will feel as if you're going to die. I guarantee that.
Brandy had heard of sweat lodges before, but had never seen one in real life. James described it as a rounded structure covered with tarps. He ducked his head to show them just how low it was. He told everyone they'd have to squat down and crawl in.
The person who's down here preparing our grandfathers is not just heating stones. He is praying over those stones. He's holding sacred space over those stones. He's setting intentions for a great experience for you over those stones.
I'd start the fire, 2-3 hours before the sweat lodge, and then keep piling wood on it and just make sure the rocks are good and hot and ready to go when they were ready for them.
While James prepped the attendees, Ted Mercer was near the tent. A thin, bald man, James had made Ted the firekeeper. It was his job to heat up the rocks and make sure the tent stayed hot. When James and the participants arrived, he added more wood to the fire.
And then he introduces me. And, he asked me, how's the fire going? And I said, it was the hottest fire we've ever had, you know, and they were all getting all excited about it and everything.
Ted's wife, Deborah Mercer, was also there to help with the ceremony.
I kind of felt responsible. I felt like I knew what was going to happen and I should be there to help the people, basically. I knew there was more people and it was hotter and it was longer. But with James Ray, I expected extreme.
As Ted tended the fire, James led his followers to the tent for one final exercise.
When you're going into a lodge, symbolically, you're going back into the womb. You're going into the womb of Mother Earth. And symbolically, what you're going to do is to die.
Die symbolically. No one sitting in that room could possibly have anticipated what would happen inside the sweat lodge. On this season of Guru.
Because I can help you, but you have to be willing. You have to be willing to do what most people won't do.
I didn't understand or know, you know, what had happened. I didn't know if this was like some kind of cult or a mass suicide or what. I could see women walking around with shaved heads, walking around almost like zombies.
I don't think I remotely even understood that life was being lost.
I don't remember hearing him say, "I'm sorry." I was like numb.
I'm not this body. I have a body. I'm not my limitations and lack. I'm more than that.
And there were some pretty heated arguments about whether or not this was a crime.
From Wondery, this is episode 1 of 6 of Guru, a story about the dark side of enlightenment. For more detail on James Arthur Ray and the scandal that shocked the self-help industry, check out the podcast Real Crime Profile. As professional criminal profilers and analysts, they break down the criminal behavior of James Arthur Ray to figure out what he was thinking and why he did what he did in these pivotal moments. This episode was written and reported by me, Matt Stroud. Associate producer is Asil Kibbe. Story editor is Casey Miner. Sound design by Jeff Schmidt. Fact-checking by Sarah McClure. Producer is Alex Jablonski. Managing producer is Lata Pandya. And executive producers are George Lavender, Marshall Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.